contains material too hot for some. Viewer discretion is advised.
Are you ready?
To Wrestling with the War!
All right, welcome back to Wrestling with the War. And boy, oh boy, we got a doubleheader here because I have my boy Bishop from Terrible Wrestling Takes back for another round of Wrestling with the War. Man, I can't believe you returned after that stinker that we just did on Super Brawl. I appreciate you being here.
You got it. And even it's because when you sent me the assignment to pick either one, I watched WWF first.
Yeah.
So I was already locked in to let's do it. And then when I watched the other one, I at least had to come here and serve justice and let you know, like, hey, man, like, if you're going to put me through it, I'm on an episode. So I earned that airtime last time. This episode, my friend, this one's for you. So you guys can find me at TWT Takes Podcast on Twitter, TWTakesPodcast.com for all platforms. Other than that, man, I'm actually able to have fun with this episode. So let's go. I'm ready.
Was it serving justice or serving hard time? I'm not sure which it was because it
Well, the hard time. Yeah, the hard time was watching the pay-per-view twice at that Super Bowl. I watched it twice. But the justice was coming here and taking up that hour and a half of your time. So,
yeah. Well, I think your comment was this in your house was awesome. The other one, not so much.
Yeah.
So, that's a good way to put it. But we did the bad. We're going to do the good now. So we'll get into this. We won't spend as much time talking about the modern product because we're keeping to this whole 90s theme here. But enjoyed that part that's of the good. Conversation last time, too. So if you haven't already listened to our last episode with Bishop, make sure you go check it out. It's Super Brawl 6. Talking that wrestling event, and we get into a discussion about the modern product and what's working, what's not, and all that good stuff, and what we feel about storylines and all that good stuff. So great conversations. But here we go. We're in your house, six, February 18th, 1996. It's from the Louisville Gardens in Louisville, Kentucky. The attendance is 5,500, which is actually a sellout in the Louisville Gardens. So don't feel like this is a bad crowd. It's actually sold out this time. This is kind of WWF's comfort zone at this time period, although for the big events, they're also going into the big arenas like Royal Rumble and WrestleMania and all this stuff. So this is going to be the last pay-per-view for WWF before WrestleMania 12. So we're tying up some storylines going into this, just to give people a little bit of a refresher on what's happening with WWF at this time. The big angles right now, I'd say, are the Bret Shawn situation over the World Heavyweight Championship and Diesel and Undertaker situation that's kind of melding together at this time. And then there's some stuff on the outside. But we have Shawn obviously coming off his win at the Royal Rumble. He now is the number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania. We're leading to the whole boyhood dream of Shawn Michaels coming true at this time. Bret is World Heavyweight Champion since Survivor Series, where he defeated Diesel for that title, which was actually a very good match between the two of them and clash of styles, but it worked well. This whole title reign for Bret has kind of been almost like a placeholder title reign. So this is basically the culmination of the Diesel Bret feud at this point. Diesel's playing a tweener at this point. He's like, hey, if you're with me, I'm still a good guy for you. If you're not with me, screw you. I'm with my clique right now. And the clique is being used a lot at this point in time. He's still buddies with Shawn Michaels, so we got that tweener stuff going on with that. So the main event of this card is a steel cage match between Bret and Diesel. If you recall, at Royal Rumble, Bret fought Undertaker for the championship, and Diesel jumped in and caused a disqualification in that match, which cost Undertaker the title in this. Undertaker promised that Diesel will never be champion again, so that'll come into play later on this card. And the other factor is we have Owen Hart has popped up and has challenged Shawn Michaels to that number one contendership at WrestleMania. The crux of the storyline with Shawn and Owen is the fact that kayfabe. Ohm was the one who put Sean out of wrestling for a little while with concussions as a result of Sean having that mugging, we'll call it, with all those Marines outside a bar, which can be debated as to how many Marines actually were there. But Sean had to lose a smile for a little bit, and he had to give away the Intercontinental title and all this jazz. And then he made his comeback, and Owen ends up doing a beautiful enziguri and knocks Sean out, and Sean's got a concussion. So Owen's now bragging up the fact that he put Sean out of wrestling, and he feels like because of that, he deserves this shot. And so at the time, I was like, it's not going to be too believable that Sean's going to lose this match. But as I was watching this again, I'm thinking to myself, actually, there's a storyline here, because if Brett and Owen go at it again, that's a pretty good match at WrestleMania 2. So interesting stuff going on here. The other big feud, I guess you can call it at this time, is Razor Ramon and the 1-2-3 Kid as well. They've been having a feud where 1-2-3 Kid has turned on Razor Ramon. He's been basically antagonizing him for the last little while. They're playing off this angle that 1-2-3 Kid's kind of like this chicken shit heel, let's put it that way, and running from Razor, and he's starting to become a crybaby and stuff like that, which leads to a fabulous stipulation match between Razor and 1-2-3 Kid, which is our crybaby match. And that's going to be the opener for this pay-per-view. And sorry, I've done a lot of talking here, Bishop. Any thoughts before we get started on the matches here?
Yeah, that wasn't the opener to the pay-per-view.
That's right. Yes, viewer discretion is advised. You want to mention that part?
Yeah, the thing that gets the 11-year-old Bishop, you know, he's got the pawn sticking up, you know what I mean? Like Sonny laying in the sand or crouched down in the sand with the water flowing all over, you know, viewer discretion is advised. I said it's that slow change into the Attitude Era where, you know, because I remember as a kid, like, it felt like WCW kicked off the Attitude Era. It felt like they were the ones that were pushing the buttons.
Yep.
But when you look at the levels in which WWE was ready to go before Diesel and Razor went over, you know, it was kind of like this mix. They both created the Attitude Era together. But this was WWE's real big push into the Attitude Era was let's put Sonny out front with the sex appeal for sure. And the way that, I mean, that's how it opened. I was like, God damn, that was something back then.
That was an iconic poster, really, for that generation. Yeah. For that generation of wrestling fans, I would say that poster actually was from that vignette of Sonny on the beach. And that would be the equivalent of the Farrah Fawcett poster back in the 70s for young people back in the day. This is wrestling, young wrestling fans, iconic poster. And I mentioned it in a previous podcast. It just feels like on January 1st, 1996, WWF decided to turn a switch and go, okay, well, let's get competitive now and let's change what we're doing, because it just feels like a different product from day one in 96 versus 95. It was brutal in 95, but I think it all comes down to that whole Medusa dropping that title in that trash can. Vince McMahon said, all right, you woke me up, let's go, and we're going to go hard on this. And right off the get-go, yeah, it's sex appeal that he's going with Sonny, which is something we weren't used to with WWF, that's for sure.
No, and it definitely was the beginning of Jerry Lawler being a fucking creep, man. Like, back then, I mean, everything felt so innocent, right? Like puppies, like we as the youth then, like even the girls who got picked on for having puppies, like it wasn't a thing. But in today's time where you go, the gall, like there's no way, like it made me feel uncomfortable. And, you know, I've apologized to myself because I don't know those people anymore of the things that I used to think was okay that are definitely not okay now. It's fucking cringe, man. Like he is over the top creepy. It's not adding to the sex appeal whatsoever. He just seems like a creepy old man. It's weird. Fucking he weird.
He does. Yeah. I'm having a real personal debate with myself, because a lot of times, like, I'm trying to watch this stuff, and I mean, I work during the day, so I might be, you know, the wife's laying in bed watching her thing. I'm watching wrestling next to her. But I'm thinking, I'm getting to the point of 97, 98 where it's going to get real offside. And do I feel even good about watching this with my wife sitting next to me? Because it's embarrassing. I mean, yeah, it was great as an 18-year-old kid watching this stuff. And we were in a totally different generation. But even 18-year-olds today would watch this and go, boy, that's offside. You know, we can't watch, you know, it's just a different generation, a different, and it really stands out now when you encapsulate. Yeah. And yeah, Lawler just came off as just a giant perv this whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, I still remember one of his most famous sayings was, because he always used the puppies, and he said, the joke was, why do puppies have warm, wet noses? And it was because I licked them. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, even back then, I'm like, this is just weird, man. You're creeping me out, King.
When his wife, Miss Kitty, was a wrestler, he was in the ring after some point, and she would do the Bronco Buster, and he's got the microphone, and he goes, make my face the happiest place. Yeah. Like, I haven't watched that episode since I was a kid, and I remember that. Like, that's how, like, raunchy he was. It's just, like, I get it, of course, the joke, all right? It's funny, but it's not, like, put yourself in his shoes. He was, what, fucking almost 50 at the time?
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's rough, man. That is rough.
It is. It is. And then you got, like, JR sitting next to him trying to be the most professional person possible. So,
right.
Yeah. Right. It was interesting. It was a different way to get heat, that's for sure. But, and luckily in this one, we don't get too much of it. We just get corny joke king in this one. So, speaking of corny jokes, we got our opening match, which is Razor Ramon versus the 1-2-3 Kid in a crybaby match. And one of the things, before I get going, it's funny, we talk about moments in time. And when I mentioned the last episode, I did a 2006 episode of TNA with Kyle from the Apron Bump. And I said, man, this just felt such a encapsulation of a time period, because, like, just the outfits and the clothes and all that stuff that they're wearing. Here's something you could see in 95. You still got the mullets from the boys, short on top, long in the back, but you're starting to see all the guys starting to grow the hair out and get into the grunge look and stuff like that. You know, 1-2-3 Kid, who had an infamous mullet, he's finally growing it out. It actually looks good on him. Sean's the same way, you know, he's growing it. Diesel's got the long hair. It's just, you're seeing the grunge movement take over and the hairstyles changing. So it's just, again, just 95 felt like it was really just a moment in time versus 96.
For sure. For sure. Another thing too, like, this is a crybaby match, and the result, like, after the result is when the crybaby effect takes place. If they do a crybaby match today, it'll be inside a steel cage with baby weapons hanging on the cage, and you got to pull them down, and you can use the baby powder during the match, and you stick a pacifier up someone's ass. Like, it's just, it, you know, at least the stipulation back then wasn't about, you know, making every aspect of crybaby involved in the match, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah. And speaking of Lawler, I would call this an old school Memphis stipulation, is what you would say, where the heel or face is going to get humiliated at the end of the match. It's not the focus of the match. It's just that there's this stipulation that, like, oh boy, like, whoever loses this is going to look like a fool out of it. And like you said, now, yeah, they'd have a pacifier stuck up their arse or something like that, you know, during the match, and people would be cheering for, you know, the heel and booing the face and all this. So it was just nice to see, like, this is just a stipulation to things. So we get into it, and I said, what a lame concept for such a good feud, because, you know, you wouldn't think that Razor Ramon against 1-2-3 Kid would work as a feud, but it worked great because they're both click brothers, and Razor wanted to make the Kid look good. Man, he made him look good in this feud. He was selling like crazy for him. I've always been amazed with Razor Ramon's work and his selling, because I said, for a guy who's 6'8" or 6'7" legit, jacked up, he always found a way to make himself smaller when he's selling, so it looked like the guy was actually getting the best of him. Thoughts on Razor and Sean Waltman?
I just got chills thinking about talking about Razor. Like, that's how good he was. Like, and to be a kid back then and not know, what was he, the Diamond Stud in WCW, and not know Big Scott Hall, but I remember the first Razor promo as a kid.
Yep.
You know, like, I was like, oh, this guy's badass. He's fucking cool. And then when he came out and how big he was, you know, and I believe I alluded to it last episode, like, you know, not getting, like, the fact that Hall and Nash were leaving and not getting that crescendo of what Razor could have been. Razor was, like, he's iconic. I mean, he went in the Hall of Fame as Razor Ramon. He didn't go in as Scott Hall. Like, Razor Ramon is, like, and it's such a blip in time, man. It's what, 4 years tops? Like, it's man, the Bloodline story right now has been going for 3 years. Like, yeah. Think about mm-hmm. that. That's how mm-hmm. short Razor was. Like, but he's iconic, and his work was flawless. Like, we're talking flawless. Yeah. He was incredible. Nobody, I mean, like you said, he's 6'8". He makes himself seem smaller. When he takes a back bump, this broad ass 6'8", you know, 8-inch back, it hits the mat. His knees go up in the air, but he doesn't seem too big when he falls. Like, he's amazing, an amazing wrestler. One of the greatest names for a move of all time, the Razor's Edge. Like, yeah. You know, his chops were flawless. His punches were flawless. He has the greatest punches of all time, and nobody talks about it. Like,
he does.
He's just so good, man. He's amazing. He was fast, but not too fast for his height. You know, he was big, but not too big for the little guys. He was amazing. I absolutely loved Razor Ramon as a kid. When he became Scott Hall, he was appointment viewing. And he always got done dirty, you know, when it came to the big one. And that whole not being a champion, but being the champion, he was definitely that. He was a standard barrier. He did bear, and he did, like, carry the show at times. But, man, that if Razor and Diesel built to a feud for that main title, and we got Razor winning the title with the pyro and the fans, I mean, man, Razor was the best, the absolute best.
That winged eagle would have looked great around his waist, man.
He was made for it. The way his body was cut down, he was built for that title. And Kid as well. I mean, he was always awesome to watch, always fun, flashy. The first time JR uses educated feet, man, was with this guy. And I'll never forget that term. Heard it the other night on Raw. They said educated feet. I was like, that's 1-2-3 Kid. He's the one with educated feet. So yeah, man, they were awesome performers. Waltman with his you know, his issues, and injury had a lot to do with his issues too. So let's not just blame him on choices. But had he stayed in ring, again, even when he came back after having abuse issues and all that stuff, and he was tagging with Kane and created X Factor, like, he's a hell of a performer. So he deserves all his adulation now. So, but yeah, I mean, I fucking loved Razor as a kid, man. If you can't tell.
Oh man, I did too, man. He was phenomenal. And I mean, I think it says enough that Vince McMahon made 1-2-3 Kid the guy that was the measuring stick for new guys coming into the WWF, right? It's like, go jump in the ring with Kid and see what you can do, right? That says a lot, because people at the time were thinking, well, he's just this skinny guy and he's, you know, just this lightweight and all this stuff. But man, the guy could go, and he was skilled, and he was a good judge of who was a good wrestler. And I laugh now, because I always thought, oh, he looks so small. 1-2-3 Kid is like 6'1", you know, close to him. Like, right now, if he stood in the ring next to the guys in AEW, he'd tower over them. And it's just crazy. But and Razor, my God, he's just like a perfect wrestler. Like, I mentioned this on another podcast when I was talking about Magnum TA, and I always said I thought Magnum had a fantastic body for wrestling. He's muscled up, but he's not a bodybuilder, you know? And I say the same for Razor. He's got a perfect body for it. He looks like he's jacked up, but he's not over-muscled. He can move, and like I say, he can shrink himself down, and he can move fast, and he's just flawless, like you said, with his chops and his punches. His greatest punch in the history of wrestling. Actually, we have two of the best punchers in wrestling in this card, with both Razor and Bret Hart. I still love Bret Hart's punches too.
Amazing punches, yeah.
Oh, and when they worked together, my God, it was just magic in that ring. I could go on forever about these two guys. It's just amazing. But this match itself, one of the things I said about the match, it was a great match in my eyes. Yep. I mean,
same thing.
Razor had his working shoes on for a kid. Kid had his working shoes on. Everything was clicking with them. I mean, some of the moves, like, they did the right thing. Razor is like tossing Kid around. He does the old SOS move off the second rope, the fall away slam that he does. That looked vicious. Two Razor Edges to Sean Waltman. It's just fantastic. They have the powder spots where it was done perfectly.
Simple psychology, right? That's something that we didn't even get a chance to mention with WCW. Simple psychology, right? DiBiase powders Razor. Kid goes to powder Razor, but Razor knocks the powder into Kid's face. That's simple psychology of how a match gets laid out to get the crowd to go up and down. Like, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I want to watch. That's what's going to hook me in, because great wrestlers can do great shit all the time. but why am I watching? Why are you pulling me in? And those little nuances in the match, I was like, fuck yeah, this match was, it was way better than I remember it being, because so many people shit on the match for, for how it's stipulated, but the stipulation has nothing to do with the actual match. So the embarrassment of Kid was perfect at the end.
Yes.
You know, like it's, so the match was way better than I ever remembered. And I wouldn't have a problem showing that match to anybody. Now you can tell that both of them were disinterested in how the stipulation was going to be executed, but the match itself, full on layout, the way it was executed, it was just fucking awesome, man. It was great.
You know, and it's amazing. Number one, there was stakes involved with it, which right away brings up the drama level on it. Number two, there wasn't a chair shot. There wasn't a table spot. There wasn't a kendo stick. There wasn't any of that stuff. Nobody kicked out of each other's finishers. Razor even made sure he put two razor edges on to Waltman just so he looks strong. You know, I know he could have got the three count in the first one, but he still wanted to put that second one on him. And that makes the Kid look like, okay, man, like, the Kid really got beat hard. That's why the Kid was unconscious and he was able to put that, because any other man would have just been fighting off, putting the diaper on him and stuff like that. But that's what it was. Waltman sold the diaper great at the end. You know, the I love how he gets up. He doesn't even realize that he's lost the match.
DiBiase's like, you know, he's slamming on the ropes and stuff. It was awesome. It was so well done.
It was great. Such a great match. And like I say, I'm with you. I didn't even feel like at the end of it that the stipulation was stupid. It made sense with the whole thing. And I said, the other comment was, only Razor Ramon could get away with making this stipulation look cool, because he just played it off. He's like, I don't know, man. This is like, whatever. Let's do it. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Just
everything about Scott Hall was cool. I mean, I think the thing that's etched in time that just proves how cool Scott Hall was is that meme where he gets hit in the head with that beer and he ends up just slicking his hair back and keeping on going.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody else would have reacted and lost their mind. He just is like moving on, you know, and that's, I love anything involving Scott Hall. And this run, I mean, of course, right from the get-go in 92 was great, but 95, 96, when he's Intercontinental Champion, when he's having these amazing matches, oh, it's just so good.
Yeah.
I think for me, when they left, Hall was the bigger loss to me. I mean, same. Diesel's a big dude and all that, but I was okay with Diesel going, but I hated losing Scott Hall.
Well, and Diesel already peaked, right? Like, and I just say that as far as accomplishments go. Like, he already won the title. He already beat Brett. He already beat Shawn. He already beat Sid. You know, he already had his, and the feud with Taker was really fun too. So like, there was more work maybe for Diesel to do, but nothing left for him to accomplish. So that thing with Razor, man, it just, it felt like such unfinished business.
Yeah, I agree. So we never really got I know we had Razor versus Diesel for the IC title, but that was a very different Diesel at that point. Yeah. We never got Razor and Brett in a true feud. We never got Razor and Undertaker in a good feud. I mean, think about that. Like, that would have been fantastic. Some of these different feuds that we had, and then the guys that started coming, could you imagine Razor and Austin in a feud?
Well, that was the thing. So you just brought it up, the Razor Diesel IC, right? Like, at that moment, IC was the launching pad to the next level, and this is where we saw Razor be done with the IC. like, the, you know, the stuff with Goldust was coming and all that, but like, that next launch pad was right there. He finished the IC. Shawn won it, Brett won it. You know, like, everyone who was dropping the IC was moving on to that next moment. And that's where it was lost. Because I say to everyone who listened when I first started the show, Turbo Wrestling Takes Podcast, for as revered as Austin and Rock are, go watch their IC title feud.
Oh, it was
awesome. Yeah. Their storytelling was top notch. So all they did was played the hits in their main title feud, and it became personal. But the fact that it became personal, because their characters were so big. But if you watch their IC title feud, it was amazing. They really learned how to tell stories then. So that's, it's different levels to this, and it feels more important when that big title's on the line. So, you know, but yeah, I agree with you. Losing Scott Hall, period, sucks. Losing Razor in WCW or in WWE was a big blow. Because, I mean, honestly, what was status-wise, you know, as far as accomplishments go, what was his biggest thing in WCW, right? He really didn't do anything there either, except win the tag titles. Now, accomplishment wise, as far as like business wise, he was amazing. So I'll give him all the credit in the world for that, for being a fantastic performer. But, you know,
well, it's I'll not say like
he
this.
Won a big title there either.
His biggest accomplishment is he made Hogan cool again.
Yeah.
I mean, he just talk about oozing machismo. He just took that and placed it on Hogan and made Hogan cool. Because that Hogan angle probably could have bombed if he didn't have a guy like Scott Hall that was just that cool factor in the ring.
I mean, Scott Hall said it and no one shut him up about it. I made wrestling cool. Yeah. He said that out of his mouth. I made wrestling cool. And it's fucking true. It's true. Because even now, like, Razor was such a bad guy for so long that I never remember hating him. And again, at 11 years old, at 10 years old, at 9 years old, seeing him do those things, like, I should hate him. But I never did. Now, and I've always had this in me watching that, like, if the match made sense and the winner won, I'm okay with that. Like, I was a Brett fan going into the Shawn match. They did it. They got it. I was like, oh, man, that was really cool, man. I remember watching, you know, and again, I was 11 years old. That was really cool. Awesome for Shawn, you know, which, by the way, that was Brett's real heel turn, not against Austin. But nonetheless, we'll get back to Razor and how much we love him.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I agree on all those points. It's just great stuff. So, and seeing two guys in this card, Owen and Razor, I just get so nostalgic, and losing them so young, it's unfortunate in this. But yeah, great match to start off things. The fans were really into it. Kid was great at the end, selling everything. DiBiase even was great with how, like you mentioned, jumping up and down the corner. That was fantastic. So again, we had our plethora of Mean Gene on the last episode, and who we're going to get a lot of in this episode is Sonny, because we go backstage to Ray Rougeau and Sonny backstage. They're manning the hotline, and Sonny mentions that she's looking forward to flirting with Razor a little bit backstage, and Ray's looking forward to talking about 1-2-3 Kid's diaper rash. So a bit of a different perspective. And then they go to a clip of Jake terrorizing Sonny with his snake. And I do mean the actual snake, not some of the things that Jake's famous for in his later years. But yeah, so can't get enough Sonny on this broadcast. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. No, I agree. And this is something... Let's give WCW credit, right? Because this is the whole point of Terrible Wrestling Takes, have the conversation. WCW having their women, their non-wrestlers, camera ready, regardless of content. Sonny wasn't camera ready. She was, I'll do Sonny, you just film me, right? Like she fumbles through everything she says. She just knows how to glam up to the camera. You know what I mean? Like I wish there was a little bit more depth to Sonny. You know, I would have much rather watched Kimberly do everything Sonny did, because she would have nailed it. Or woman. Right. She would have nailed it, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It was the face that ran the place at that point. So,
yeah.
All right. And here's what I love about going back to 96, just seeing the young lions here in this. And we got another one in our next match. It's Hunter Hearst Helmsley against Duke the Dumpster Drozzi. So the storyline here is a couple of weeks ago on Superstars, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the Connecticut Blue Blood, jumps in the ring and during a Drozzi match, knocks him out and starts cutting his hair, his long hair off. And so now Duke is looking for revenge. So right off the get-go, we have Hunter being escorted out to the ring by another lovely lady. Her name is Elizabeth Hilden, who was actually a Pentos pet. And she was Pentos pet of the year the following year in 97. So old Hunter doing good for himself there. And, you know, Lawler is about to blow a gasket when he sees this lady coming out. And, you know, I was actually surprised. She did a pretty good job. She seemed into the role. You get a lot of these times where they hire these people and they're just not into it. But even when Lawler gets her on the microphone, she was, you know, she knew her role, cheering on Hunter, that stuff. So it was pretty good. There was actually some chemistry between the two of them. And then we also had Duke backstage do a promo with Todd Pettengill. And we hadn't heard much from Duke, and I thought it was a decent promo by Duke as well. He showed some fire in it.
Yeah, I thought, and that was another thing. Like, again, the juxtaposition with WCW, you can see how the wrestlers have a more, what feels like a more authentic approach to their performance or to their delivery of promos. So I really enjoyed everything Duke the Dumpster Drozzi did too. Like, I don't remember him being as good as he was.
Yeah, for sure. So your thoughts on this match? I'm interested to get your thoughts on this match, because I have my thoughts on it.
So number one, back then, I remember liking Triple H. Yeah. I remember liking that the whole DDP thing, right? Who am I going to like on this side? Well, it was Austin. It was Triple H. It was Kid. It was Razor, you know, while I'm watching Shawn and Brett and Diesel and Sid and all them do that thing, right? Triple H was one of them. And I'm watching the match and I go, why didn't anybody ever call Triple H a Ric Flair knockoff? Like, he's doing the heel tactic in the corner with the hand up. He's doing the knee, the eye rake, what I write down, the heel head shake, the eye poke, the knee, the chops, the corner flip, like all Ric Flair to a T. And he was just never considered that. I thought Duke was awesome. His athleticism was off the charts, which in a jumpsuit, you don't necessarily see the muscles do the things, you know what I mean? Like everyone else in tights. His gimmick was corny, but he made it work. Other than that, it was a solid match. It was fun. Again, that whole thing with Harlem Heat, how they didn't show the talent. This is a talent display in a wrestling match. It can get, I don't want to say boring, but, you know, it can get, okay, well, that was that. But there is a thing about watching talent, so you get to enjoy a character. So other than that, yeah, Triple H being a Ric Flair knockoff was a surprise to me because I don't remember it being that similar.
Yeah, so I'll come out and be honest here. I'm a big Triple H mark. Hunter being the last name on this is a tribute to him, right? So BC's actually my initials. Hunter just thrown on there as it. So I liked Triple H. I liked this Hunter Hearst Helmsley character. I liked the Connecticut Blue Blood. I know a lot of people crap on the gimmicks that they had back at this time. And yes, of course, you know, like the plumber is a stupid gimmick, and you know the goon is a stupid gimmick, but I enjoyed, like, say, like a Henry Godwin. I thought, you know, you needed that kind of big old rugged hillbilly. I enjoy the Connecticut Blue Blood because look at the feuds he has. He has a feud against Godwin where it's two styles that are different from each other. You have him against the Garbage Man. It's the two styles that are different from each other. So you got built-in storyline with that you can play off of. I thought, you know, I loved watching Helmsley work. I know, yes, he did a lot of Ric Flair stuff. I consider he was a combination of Ric Flair and Harley Race is who he borrowed a lot of stuff from. Like some of his stuff was Harley Race. That knee drop is in the high knee is a Harley Race move as well. If you're going to pick two people to copy off of, I guess those are two good ones.
It's not a bad take. And I'll agree with that for sure. Cause even now I was just on Wrestling on the Rocks the other day. And we were talking about LA Knight and how people are complaining of him being an Austin Rock ripoff. And to be fair, and I'll agree, because back then I didn't know Ric Flair like that. I didn't know Harley Race like that. So to me, as a kid who enjoyed Hunter Hearst Helmsley back then, like it was good for me because I was into it. My 8-year-old son loves LA Knight. He's not used to Stone Cold or The Rock's performances. So if you have influence, and this is another thing with the gimmicks back then, the goon, the plumber, all that, even Duke. If you have a starting off point, and this is LA Knight getting his shtick, right? Okay, I'm going to copy these guys. I'm going to be influenced by these guys, all that stuff. I'm going to take the dumpster character and say that I'm going to take out the trash as my finish move, right? He has the trash compactor as a finishing move. If that's your starting off point, and then you make it your own to translate to the audience and become a thing, that's the job.
Yeah,
that is the job. So when Hunter Hearst Helmsley comes in with this shitty gimmick, quote unquote, shitty gimmick, no, he's getting a chance to interject himself behind a facade so he can be himself. Bishop has nothing to do with my name whatsoever, you know, but if I come out and I give you my entire name and I put myself out there with all my authenticity and I fail, I have nothing to hang back on. But this Bishop character gives me the chance to just talk my shit and get used to having a voice. That's all these wrestlers have done back then. So that's the whole point of having a goon or a Duke or whatever, Brooklyn Brawler for years, right? Like you need a character or an influence to get your voice interjected so you can become more authentic in who you are. So LA Knight works today because he's LA Knight within the influence of those characters. It's not a repeat at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, that's where I'll agree with you, where Triple H, all-time great. I wasn't a fan of his striker phase because I loved this phase so much. Mm-hmm. This phase where before he got super jacked, this Harley Race Ric Flair version I loved, which is ironic because I'm not a Ric Flair guy at all. So, but I thought it was a really clean match. I thought Duke did great, and I wish he had a better career just based off of this match.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and I'm glad that you did enjoy it, because I went on and I just, because I enjoyed the match too. I thought it was a great match. Even from the opening moments, you have Duke come in. Here's what I love. Like here's a complaint against, like, say, like a Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair can get jumped by 14 people, beaten up, you know, everything happens to her, and her next match against that person, she's coming to the ring, skipping and swinging her ponytail, right? Duke the Dunkster Drozzi couldn't wait to get out of that interview. There was two times that Pettengill had to call him back because he wanted to get to the ring. He runs to the ring. He slides right in there because he wants to face Triple H. And I love Triple H. He was quick as a cat getting on top of Duke. So there was stakes. These are two guys that should be pissed off at each other. And that's what you had. I thought the match was pretty good. I was really impressed by Duke's performance in this match. But I read a lot of reviews where people crapped on the match. And I don't think they watched. I think they just thought, it's Duke the Drumster Drozzi and it's Triple H before he's, you know, Triple H, and it's like just stupid gimmicks. But you're right, it's a jumping off point for these guys. You don't have Triple H become the Cerebral Assassin if he doesn't have something else that he has to that he has to drop off, you know, like. So I remember reading something one time. It was the guy that was Carlito's bodyguard when Carlito first came in and was US champ. I forget his name. I think it was like Jose Estrada or something like that. And he had like a bunch of gimmicks. He had like a vest and a hat and a cane and all this stuff. And I remember he said that Triple H gave him advice one time and said, like, take off a few of the gimmicks. He said, you can always add to it or you can always change it up. But if you have too much stuff, you know, it's hard to escape that. And like, this is the same idea. Like Triple H, he became like a badass by, you know, dropping the Connecticut Blue Blood, just throwing on, you know, a t-shirt, having a match with Cactus Jack. Randy Orton, same thing, became a badass by having a match with Cactus Jack. You know, you have all these guys that you need to have a starting point where they basically can rally against that and say, yeah, I had this crappy character. Now I'm this guy and I'm, you know, good. Hardcore Holly, another guy, like, you know, he was Sparky Plug and now he turns into Hardcore Holly or something like that. I like that idea. You know, some of them are, ridiculous, but to the point, if somebody's good enough, they're going to shake that off and they're going to become a superstar no matter what. And like the whole, you know, copying Ric Flair and Harley Race, like, or LA Knight copying Stone Cold or Rock. Well, great. You might as well pick the best to copy. Hulk Hogan copied, you know, superstar Billy Graham, you know, like,
for sure.
But does anybody remember, you know, a guy who copied like Wild Bill Irwin? Not really, you know, like, you know,
because we don't know Wild Bill Irwin, but I'm sure somebody did. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he was the goon is who he was. That's who Wild Bill Irwin was. But, you know, this is what I'm saying. Like, nobody remembers that. So why? Yeah, you can copy Wild Bill Irwin, but or you can copy Bruiser Brody and people are going to go, that guy's a Bruiser Brody knockout. But hey, I like Bruiser Brody. So is this guy any good? LA Knight, you're got to show some balls to be able to pick Austin and Rock to copy, because everybody's going to compare you to him, and yet the guy's still getting over, so that's impressive.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Deb.
And we host a pretty fun podcast called Today We Laughed and Learned. You know, this is where we discuss all the things we should have learned, but, well, never did. And we have quite a few laughs along the way.
Today We Laughed and Learned with Chris and Deb.
We're curious about everything. Experts on nothing.
Come find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Anyway, so that's an 8-minute match and we spent 20 minutes talking about it. I love it.
I love it all day, brother.
The funniest thing was, too, it was a funny moment in the match at the end where Duke's throwing in the trash can, the trash lid. I don't know if you noticed, but the trash
lid hit Hunter in the head. Yeah. I wrote it down. Yep.
That was great. And here's another little thing that I love. We talked about nuances, and this is something that drives me out of my mind today, is, Triple H used a trash can lid, and he tried his damnedest to get that lid out of the ring, and unfortunately it hit the ropes and came back in. And I'm pretty sure at the end of that match, you could see him kind of do this to the ref, and I think he apologized to the ref because he knew that made the ref look bad in the match, and he didn't want the ref to look bad. Because the ref had to like pretend he didn't see it, and that
I think he accidentally hit the ref when he went to throw it out, and it still didn't go out. I think it was like a combination of all that. I mean, Austin said it all the time. There's three of us in there, you know, that they matter.
And how many matches do you see nowadays where they'll do something right out in the open, like there's a broken guitar laying in the ring and the referee doesn't notice this? Or right. how many times does Aubrey right. turn too quick and there's something going on right in front of her and there's no disqualification? It's like he was making the effort to try to get that out of there, and he's like, fuck, I can't believe I yeah. that happened. So, yeah, just yep. little – I love little things in matches. That's the beauty of it.
And that's because it lets us know we're investing – they're investing as much as we are, you know, yeah. that's why I've said about the celebrities that come to WWE. Like, if you want to shit on a Bad Bunny match, because why is Bad Bunny here? Well, watch how much he cares. Logan Paul was not likable before to me or in anyone I've ever talked to until he got into WWE. And when you watch the work he puts in and how much he cares, how much he tries, Pat McAfee, same way. Listen to Pat McAfee talk about going back to WWE. The first thing he says is, how you get back into shape. And yeah. it's not about him being athletic enough to do it. It's about putting in the work to show the respect to everyone else. But when the performers care, when they're trying, it's because they're trying to do it for us. They're not doing it for them. They're doing it for yeah. us, because that's how you execute the art form. So yeah, that apology goes a long way, because he doesn't want the ref to look bad to yeah. us. You know, it's awesome. I love it.
I think we talked about it last episode. It's one thing for this to be fake, but when you tell us it's fake, then that really takes us out of the product. Yeah. And I see yeah. that happening so much in today's product. Whereas back in the day, like everybody says, oh, well, you know, kayfabe and all that stuff. But there's a reason why guys didn't get seen together, a heel and a face. Or there's a reason why when a heel was in an elevator, he acted like a heel or all that stuff. It's not that hard nowadays. MJF's pulling it off. Why can't everybody else pull it off? It's not impossible to do. We know it's scripted and predetermined. Guess what? We knew that back in the 80s too, but Jesus, we loved it back in that day, you know? So it's just these little things, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I just got to have fun.
Yeah, exactly. So we go backstage with Doc Hendricks with Yokozuna. And this is, actually a pretty pivotal moment, because it's the first time that we've heard Yokozuna talk besides saying Banzai. But and then Yokozuna turns out that he's a street thug from San Francisco as opposed to a Japanese sumo wrestler. And again, it goes back to, we didn't have the internet that time, so didn't realize that he's actually one of the Anoa'i family. He's not a sumo wrestler. But what'd you think of with the Yoko's promo here?
Yeah, I remember being blown away as a kid, because I assumed he was Japanese, and then he was talking with no accent. I was like, oh my god, this is crazy. Yoko's promo was fucking unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean, the Samoan family, say what you want about any of them, but you can't say they don't know wrestling. They just know it. They just get it. They're just amazing at it. They all give a shit, and none of them get handed anything. They all pay their dues. They all work their way up through the ranks. No one's handed a fucking thing. Roman had to fail at football, go through development, and then get onto the main roster to be in a tag team for 3 fucking years before he got his chance. Like, they all go through it. I mean, it's amazing the work and level they put in to be, you know, in the family business. So, long story short, I had such good memories of Yoko while he had the promo, because I remember it back in the day. I was like, oh my god, he's talking. He's not speaking in Japanese. This is amazing.
Yeah. It was a great promo. It really was. I mean, and he, you know, for the first time hearing him talk, he hit you right between the eyes with it. When you're like, holy shit, where'd this come from? So good stuff. And then we get to the match, and unfortunately.
Well, so real quick, yeah. I shook my head because you said we went backstage, and all I have written down in this spot was adult sweatshirt, one size fits all. That's why I shook my head. Not at the Doc Hendricks promo. They were shilling a sweatshirt for adults. One size fits all. What the fuck does that even mean?
I forgot about that. That's right. It was Pettengill or something doing the yeah. shop zone. Yeah. It's good call
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I was like, I, what is that? I don't even know. What size? It should fit everyone. Okay. It's about a large, I think is what they said. Something like that. It was so dumb.
Does it fit Yoko?
Right. And that's who they go to next is Yoko? Like, yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So we get the match here. It's the British Bulldog against Yokozuna. And the whole story is, of course, Camp Cornette was Bulldog Owen and Vader now in Camp Cornette and Yokozuna. And the boys finally turn on Yoko after a bunch of screw up some matches and stuff like that. And the whole reason for this is because Yoko is really starting to pack on the weight pretty seriously. I mean, he's massive at this point. I think they're claiming he's 640 pounds. He's probably more like 700 at this point. He's not far away from heading off to the weight loss clinic, the Duke Weight Loss Clinic, to try to get him. They're worried about his health, for sure. They're worried about his heart and all that stuff. And unfortunately, it wasn't a good story for Yoko. It never worked for him. And he passed away a few years after this. But in this match, you can really see how Yoko, because when he was first in WWF, he was 500 pounds, but he can move very well and he was great in the ring. But right now he's pretty gassed by the 4 minute mark of this match, and Davey's trying to work around him basically. Yeah. He's bouncing off him like a pinball and, you know, doing everything he can to make things like look like it's movement. And it's just, it's rough to watch, and it's over pretty quickly. Cornette jumps him with the tennis rack, and then Vader comes out. They handcuff him to the ropes and put the beat down on him. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I said this might be Yoko's last best match. You know, it is rough to watch compared to his other stuff, but I haven't watched Yoko in so long. Actually, I think the last match I watched was him and Brett at 10. And that was a tough one for him, too. He was having a hard time in that, so I think he may have gone to the weight loss and come back one time before this might be his final send-off. But I thought they worked really well together. I thought, again, in structure-wise, they set up the action on the outside for Davey Boy to get offense. So I agree with you. It was a bit of a try for Yoko, but I always loved Yokozuna. Again, another bad guy that you're not supposed to like. But when you just see the athleticism, you go, fuck, this guy's pretty good. There's nothing you can say, you know? So I've always had good memories of watching Yokozuna. They did that story on him. Was it on Netflix or A&E or something? And that was so heartbreaking to listen to, especially watching Rikishi tell the stories. Like, I mean, you know, you feel for him. You know, you feel for the family that, you know, like Rosie too, Roman's brother. Like, these guys, they get to a way where, you know, they have this innate, you know, weight, you know, genetics that just take over, and it causes all these lingering issues. That's why I love watching the Usos get into shape, you know, and not, you know, they're taking their health really seriously because they just got a family history of shit going the wrong way. So, you know, Yokozuna, nothing but respect for him for all time. You know, I didn't realize that this was leading towards the Vader stuff, which I had fond memories as a kid because they did, you know, the forklift stuff and all that. Like, you know, so it is, knowing the truth now, it always spoils wrestling, but, you know, it's, I thought that was my first note. This might be Yoko's last best match.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, again, looking at other people's comments on, I think they're a little bit too hard on Yoko in this match. I mean, he's still Yokozuna. He's still a presence. He still drops that leg, and I still don't know how he doesn't kill people with it. But he, apparently every wrestler says that he was light as a feather with that leg drop, which is amazing.
You said that a few times, you know, that the comments that people have on this, and it might be a little too hard. This is where I want to give our mutual friend Kyle respect. The Apron Bump podcast, when Kyle does his shows, this is what I told him when I went on his show and the reason why I went on his show. He watches stuff from 94, 95, 96 as if he's in 94, 95, 96. He doesn't watch it with today's eyes and rip it apart as if it's not up to snuff. When you watch it with those eyes, that's why it's so great coming on here with you. We were both watching back then. So we have those memories that trigger to us that goes, man, this is so cool to see this, that, and how it all folds together. You can't watch it with today's eyes because it's just different. The athletes are different. The style of and presentation of wrestling is different. So, you know, anyone who shits on it, I'm pretty sure they weren't watching back then, or they don't watch it the way Kyle does.
Well, and I had this thought the other day, like, honestly, because there's so much of this shitting on the product and there's so much of shitting on the old school. And you have somebody who's 20 years old shitting on wrestling from the 80s. Oh, it was terrible. It was slow. These guys didn't do this and that. But you weren't there.
Yeah.
They don't know what it was like. They don't know what we saw in the past and comparing it to. So people who are around and saw the 70s stuff, seeing the 80s stuff, I'm like going, wow, this is full speed ahead for this stuff. Yeah, comparing it to like Kenny Omega now, it's not the same because it's a different athlete right now. But at the time, it was great. That's why I will never say so-and-so was better than somebody that I didn't see. Like, I will never say that Wayne Gretzky was better than, Maurice the Rocket Richard, because I never watched Maurice Richard. All I can do is hear stories about him or see clips of him, but I didn't actually see him in action. I didn't see the effect he had on the sport. Just like I can't say Mark McGwire was a better home run hitter than Babe Ruth, because I didn't watch Babe, you know?
Right.
I can say, for me, I can sit here and go, I think Michael Jordan's a better basketball player than LeBron James or something like that, because I watched both of them and I watched the sport. And some of you'll say, how can you say that? LeBron's done such and such. But you weren't around to watch basketball in the 80s and see how physical it was and how much this guy dominated the sport and stuff like that. So I never like to get into those comparisons. And I find it kind of just, I don't know, immature for somebody to say, oh, this sucks because it's not as good as today. It's like, well, you weren't there, so you don't know what it was like to sit in that moment and watch this stuff. So I love what you're saying about Kyle, the way he watched it. I think that's the way we both watch the product and compare things. So it's not like you can't have an opinion on something that you're watching, but go back and actually watch it and understand it first before you give that crappy opinion to say, oh, well, you know, that was slow and boring and stuff like that.
Yeah, even listen to you on your show, or listen to Kyle on his, or listen to someone, you know, because if anyone can go back and you can call it ripping wrestling in the 80s, right? Like, it's you can go back and do it when, like you said, compare it to the athletes like Kenny Omega and all that. Like, I'm not a Kenny Omega guy because he doesn't tell stories. You know, I think his wrestling isn't up to snuff, but he's the fucking craziest athlete I've ever seen in the ring. Like, the stuff he does is incredible. But what story are you telling? You know, so. But that's besides the point. We can go on tangents all day, but I agree with you. Like, I have no problem having a real conversation. I fell in love with Kyle's show. I'm like, oh my God. Like, you say in the beginning, oh, this was 4 years before I was born, but you're giving the commentary that, like, for the time. Actually, I think it was an episode with you where he was like, oh, I'm starting to love the Nasty Boys. And you're like, I can't stand the Nasty Boys. But when I went on his show, I was like, dude, the Nasty Boys are awesome, aren't they? And, you know, we went on this Nasty Boy tangent because, like, for that time, in that age group, they were perfect. They're not the greatest tag team of all time. No way. The Steiners, LOD, you had so many others back then that were just better. But they were heat magnets, man. They got the crowd going. You know? So there's nuance to it, like we said in the last two episodes, for sure.
Agree. Yeah. All right. Sorry, that was my soapbox, and I'll get off
your
that
show.
Now. But all right, so now we go back to speaking of segments that probably won't work in this time period is Goldust and Marlena backstage, and I guess they're doing America Online or something like that, and you have Goldust fondling the guy that's scared to death while typing, and he's whispering in his ear what he wants him to write, and so obviously there's something that they're going towards as far as what they're saying about Goldust, and you know, leaving it up to the imagination, but it's pretty easy to figure out what tone they're going for. But of course, this wouldn't fly today. It just would not fly. And so it's just a moment in time. But again, if somebody was watching it in today's era, they go, oh my God, this is horrible. But at the time, that was his character, and that's what worked.
Well, and it's funny, too, because leaving it up to the imagination leaves it up to the bad side of the imagination, right? Like, androgyny was what it was, right? But if you want to take it in full effect, is he... does he enjoy cross-dressing? Is he bisexual? Is he gay? And Marlena is just, you know, his companion. But then you have wrestlers like Effie or Sunny Kiss or even Nyla Rose who are on all spectrums of the LGBTQ community. And all of that's okay because they're not portraying what they aren't. Mm-hmm. You know, but like you said, this Goldust only isn't okay because he would be portraying what he isn't. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily agree with that take because you should portray what you're not if you can perform. Mm-hmm. A lot of what Goldust did after this, I did think was over the top, you know, when he's, you know, the bra and panty matches and things like that. But it's a shame that something like this couldn't exist. But Dalton Castle kind of did it for a while, too. So, you know, there's a chance that androgyny could play, but the overt touching and groping and the way he would lick performers on their face when they didn't want to. Maybe those are some of the things that you couldn't cross those lines today. But, you know, I agree with you. Goldust was definitely of 96, not of 2023.
Yeah. Well, and shame on you, Bishop, for using your mind and actually realizing actually realizing these people are playing a role, you know, come on, you know, like, geez, it's you like, know. It's like the, you know, Fritz von Erich playing a Nazi. He wasn't actually a Nazi, folks, but he's just playing it because that gets heat at the time, you know? So it's just, yeah, it's too much. I don't understand all these people that brag about, you know, not getting fooled by the kayfabe, yet they'll get so up in arms about something like that, right? It's just like, it's character work, right? It's character work. And then we go into probably the match of the night. We're going to have to say here, it's Owen Hart versus Shawn Michaels for the World Heavyweight title shot at WrestleMania 12. What are your thoughts on this matchup on Shawn Michaels at this point in time? Interested to know.
So as a kid, I was ready. They were feeding me the story of the boyhood dream coming true. I was so fucking ready. I was a Brett guy. I was a Brett guy. I liked his style of wrestling over Shawn's. I liked him more than Owen because I liked a guy who could beat down his opponent with his hands and work the arm, all that stuff. Owen did even too much flipping for me back then, right? So I liked how Brett could tell a story. So I wasn't a Shawn guy. Rewatching now, watching the video package, and then seeing Shawn come out, I said, fuck you and your sympathy. I'm not rooting for Shawn at all. It was so hard to root for Shawn. They give you this video package of sympathy, and he comes out when he's shaking his thing, and he's coming off the like he's like nothing phases him. So you're telling me from Shawn's presentation, Shawn already overcame that. Look at his confidence. He has nothing to work for anymore. He has the confidence. So what did he go through? No, there's no adversity here anymore. Fuck Shawn. Fuck Shawn. So that's how I started with the match. Yeah, I said it's hard to root for Shawn now. I said the video package showed how he was humbled, quote, and he's still a dick. That's what I wrote. So sorry to cut you off. I just fuck.
No, I fully and 100% agree. He is the most unlikable babyface at this point. He is so cocky, it's beyond belief. In every interview he does, he's dancing like a stripper on top of the roof, swinging down. Where's that concussion at? There's no sympathy on that. I mean, for everybody who complains about the Cody Rhodes easy path, this is looking like an easy path for him as well. You know, he's almost mocking the sport and mocking his opponents, which that's not a babyface move to do. He's, you know, he comes in the ring, he knocks Owen out of the ring, and then still does his intro and stuff like that. It's nothing babyface about it. And he's just like smarmy and just like, so you could tell that McMahon was in love with him at this point. And McMahon's almost having an orgasm at ringside talking about Shawn. And then you can tell that this is the point when you know what happened behind the scenes, that the click was really in control of what was happening. And Shawn just felt bulletproof at this point. And then the match happened. And of course, Shawn Michaels puts on an amazing performance in the match. Owen is an amazing performer. Once Shawn finally took it seriously and he stopped making Owen look bad by making him look embarrassing, it got good. It got really good because Shawn is a great performer.
Yeah, that's, as you were saying, I was like, you know, that Shawn Michaels Hogan match where he bumped all over the place to show how ridiculous it was, this kind of like, it had those semblances as I'm gonna overperform for the guy next to me, and Owen's not the guy to do that with. Owen he's as clean as it gets. So if he just slowed down a bit and had a great match with Owen, and we got that like towards the middle of the match for sure.
I almost feel like Owen must have even said something, said, you know, come on, man, let's do this. You know, we're building you, like, let's give me something here. And I forget where it was, who said it, but it's, I think it was on a different podcast we were talking, and somebody said it's almost like Shawn and Diesel were in on a joke that nobody else was in on, and it just didn't come off well. You know, it might have been Kyle, I can't remember, but anyways, it's like they're just smirking and all this stuff. It's like those two clowns. two clowns in class that are like in on this funny joke, like they fart it, nobody else can smell it or something like that. It's like, you know, it's like, no, it doesn't work, man. You're baby faces. You're supposed to come off as baby faces. But yeah, I don't know if this was on purpose by Owen or not, but when he mocked Sean and went out and did the same thing Sean did when he slid out of the ring and went around to the fans trying to high five them, I think that might've been what woke Sean up. And then Sean does that amazing no-look body press off the top rope to the floor, and it's on from there. Great match going through. I like the callback to the Enziguri spot where Owen hit it, and he goes outside the ring, although I'm like, what the hell is Hebner doing? Why is he outside the ring trying to shake Sean awake instead of, you know, counting him out?
Doesn't count, yeah.
Because this is the spot for WrestleMania, and then why is Owen going out and throwing him back in the ring when he could have got the count of victory? So that was making the heel look kind of dumb, and Owen is not a dumb guy. But, you know, not, as much as I'll crap on Shawn Michaels, he was over with the fans. I mean, the girls in the crowd were going on like it's the Beatles. You know, it's just crazy. And the match itself was great. And then even the ending sequence was great, where Owen misses the Enziguri. He ducks the super kick and then gets into another super kick, and it's 1-2-3. And I know a lot of people think, well, it was a, you know, it's an obvious match ending. It's Sean's going to win and keep that spot. But you did have that storyline of Owen and Brett, and that would have been a great main event in WrestleMania. Yeah. Owen and Brett had it again.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's some of the things where that cocky attitude in the beginning doesn't give you the hope that Owen has a chance. You know, if he was able to sell a little bit more beforehand, like you said, where's the concussion stuff at? Where's the smile being lost still, like what? And I don't know how many matches he had from coming back from all of this. You know, did he wrestle on Raw at all? Was he at the previous In Your House?
Two or three matches. That's it. Nothing serious.
Okay. Yeah. So like, you know, maybe he's shaking off some rust, but yeah, when the way he came out, I'm like, I don't. Yeah. It just, so when you're working at, you know, Sean's up here already, you know, now you got to get Owen up to here or bring Sean down to here. It's like, okay, now that they're at the same level, are we going to get that win loss? Like you said, maybe towards like that 3-quarter mark where the Enziguri happens. It's like, okay, here we go. This is, Owen has a shot now, but we didn't think Owen had a shot in the very beginning. Yeah. And had commentary put over the fact of Brett and Sean a little bit, or Brett and Owen a little bit more. But this was, like you said, it was a Shawn Michaels love fest, and it was so hard to root for him. So, but I mean, I love the match. Like you said, when Owen woke him up, it seems like things really got going. It's no, you know, classic by any means, but I think a lot of that had to do with Sean's attitude.
Yeah, I agree. That took away from the match itself. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Cornette had maybe even said something to Sean, because Cornette's infamous that he was not a fan of Sean in this time period. I mean, he respects that he's one of the greatest workers of all time, but he wasn't a fan of Sean. So I could see Cornette's not one to hold his tongue. I could see him saying something to Sean and saying, get serious and let's go with this. But yeah, in the end, they pulled out a great match. But I was and I still am a Brett guy. I know a lot of people are crap on Brett and think that he's bitter, but I just think he loves wrestling, and he's not liking what he's seeing right now. But I was cheering for Brett the whole time, and this didn't make me want Sean to win anymore, seeing how cocky.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. From there, we go to Roddy Piper with Todd Pettengill on the stage. And of course, it's just a waste of time while they're getting the steel cage set up. The old big blue steel cage. We haven't seen that one in a long time. And Piper does his thing, you know, hypes up WrestleMania 12, announces a couple of matches. He also mentions that Vader and Yokozuna are going to have a one-on-one, which actually it turns into a six-man tag, because Yokozuna is just not able to carry a one-on-one match at this point. And then, you know, you have Cornette come out, and he, you know, you got two of the best mic guys in the business going at it. And then it ends with Piper Goose and Jim Cornette and sexually assaulting them. So, you
know, and that's another one. I mean, as much as we revere Roddy Piper, go back and listen to half his promos and half the shit he did. He was an untamed beast, that guy was.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's Hot Rod, so.
He wouldn't get away with half the stuff nowadays that he said. But, and honestly, some of the Piper's promos are a little bit meandering and coke fueled, you know. So, but Cornette was always just magic on the mic, man. That guy could just talk the phone book at 100 miles an hour and come off good. But Yeah, so we got a little bit of promo while we wasted time. Then we're right into Brett versus Diesel for the heavyweight title in a steel cage. And they're interesting. We talked about the great promo packages by WWF, but they didn't do a promo package for this match.
Yeah.
Weird. So Diesel comes out first. At this point, I'd say the crowd reaction is 50-50 for him. Throughout the match, it definitely goes down for him. He's starting to become the heel. Brett comes out, definitely got the crowd behind him. I don't feel that the fans are turning on Brett quite yet. As you mentioned, at WrestleMania, you start to get the heel turn going on at that point. Methodical match, I will say that. There was a little bit of blood, probably would have helped this match out, but they really had the no bleeding policy at this point. Some of the things that I thought from this match, it's amazing Brett attacking a turnbuckle. It, to this day, it still blows my mind. It sounded like a car crash when he would hit because the cage would rattle and stuff like that. Anything you want to add about this match?
Yeah, so when it comes to performing, I mean, this is a thing that wrestlers have talked about. It's a dance, right? They're in there and they're doing this together. And if you don't trust your opponent, if you don't work with your opponent, you're not gonna have a good match. And that's something that I've said to other podcasters before. That Brett turnbuckle spot, that's his "this is for you," right? Mm-hmm. This is the spot that I will give everyone I wrestle to show you I am here for you. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to do that shit. The way he puts his chest right into that fucking steel turnbuckle, it's got a pad on it, but come on. I mean, how much is that a pad? So he's going to do that for every opponent he's with. This is your chance to now take over the match. I'll help you shine afterwards. And then we'll go from there. But yeah, we talked about it earlier. Brett's punches, unbelievable.
Unreal.
I love how Brett works a body part that, you know, put the leg on the rope with the hop and squat on it. Like, it's just, he breaks down a leg like no one else. And it's to set up his finisher. I mean, it's the easiest thing to point out. They're like, hey, I do a sharpshooter. I'm going to fuck your knee up. Don't let me fuck your knee up. It's perfect. It's how he does his matches, and none of them feel like it's another Brett match, you know. So I loved it. I thought it was, I just listened to you guys, you know, talk about, you know, how Brett and Diesel, you know, it was probably his best match in that one, and then you're like, but there's this next one, and then I watched this next one, I'm like, yeah, like it's a really good match, man. Brett's awesome. He doesn't like to wrestle if he's not going to be really fucking good at it. So when it comes down to greatest of all time, man, he is one of the most flawless wrestlers. There's not a lot of bad matches out there with him in it. And if there is, I haven't seen it yet. So
yeah, you're never going to get a bad performance out of Brett. But I will say this about this match. I wasn't as big a fan of this match as the one that they had previously. I found very methodical. Diesel was very methodical in this match. He was moving slow, and it wasn't just for selling the knee, but everything was just slow. And there was times when he should have tried to at least try to escape the cage, and he just didn't. So Brett had to do some extra selling in that. He was slow on anything that was going on until Brett was finally, how many times Brett had to basically trip himself up on the cage just to wait for Diesel to come get him. It picked up towards the end, and of course, because that's Brett knows how to structure a match. I think if the match was maybe about 5 minutes shorter, it would have been a bit better for them because Diesel was just slow on this. But then that nut shot that Diesel did to him was vicious. And then the crotch job by Brett on the rope afterwards. I mean, I still don't know how these guys pull that one off.
Yeah, and Brett's, you know, and I'll another one for Kyle. Brett always does a great crotch job.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's an atomic drop or on the ropes or a low blow, he is one of the best at selling a crotch job for sure.
That one where he comes across the ring and jumps into the rope and the guy moves, I still don't know how he does that one. He always makes it look good. And then the fans finally got up for it when Diesel was making that last attempt to get out of the cage and looked like he was going to escape, and Brett's crawling to get him. And then that's when you have Taker come out of the ring, you know, cut the ring and come up and grab Diesel and pull him down to hell at that point. And Brett just kind of slides up the cage and gets out. I felt like, you know, the negative on this was Brett just felt like an afterthought in this, because then you went right from that to Diesel comes out of the hole and the Undertaker comes out, and then Diesel scoots up the the cage, and he kind of forgot about that knee that was getting worked on the whole match. But all count to two that he was scared shitless of the Undertaker, and that's what got him going. And then, you know, for 5 minutes we're talking about Diesel and Undertaker, and Brett's just a forgotten thing. So really it became, this was this click show. It was Razor, it was Diesel, and it was Sean that dominated this show. And I just, it felt weird that the champ, you know, got lost in the shuffle here.
Well, I can agree with you that it sounds a little bit too passionate, though, because when you look at, like, I listened to Nash talk about his exit, and he said he was asked, this was one of the things he was asked for, was to put Taker over at Mania. Mm-hmm. So this was the build to that match. And I respect Brett for putting in a good match and leaving the finish to be for more for Taker than Diesel. So I think if you look at it that way, you can see how sometimes the champ has to be the catalyst for what this is. Now, I agree that, you know, well, no, like, I mean, structure it right, right? It was a Royal Rumble. Brett beats Diesel for the title in the rematch.
Survivor, he beats him for the title.
Survivor, okay. So in the
it's
rematch.
It's Taker at Royal Rumble.
Gotcha. In the rematch, we have Diesel versus is Brett. It works. You can get there. But what I like to say about a lot of wrestling now, I shouldn't have to fill in the blanks. So to your point, had they put the video package in the beginning and they made it more true to that, then you have the blow off, then you have Taker, then you have Taker Diesel. So I can see what you're saying. A video package could have solved all that for sure. The other thing I had, they called it a 15-foot steel cage. Diesel's got the boot on Brett's chin while holding the top of the steel cage. Yeah. Like, come on. It's not 15 foot. Even to the outside of the ring, we're talking, you know, all right, he's 6'10 with his arm up in the air. It's probably 9 foot. So the cage is 9 and then 12. So maybe 12 foot from the floor to the top of the cage. But in the ring, that blue steel's maybe 8.5 foot tall. It's not that tall.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, I wrote down, because I watched WCW after this, that Rocco Rock falls off of, he goes through a table off the audience platform. That if the cage was 15 foot tall, that platform is what, like 50 foot in the air? Like, it's just, we got to do our math right here, you know? But that's wrestling. They inflate the heights. So
I'll put some context into that whole ending to this match. Apparently, this was the infamous, I don't know if you've ever heard the story that Kevin Nash talks about where Undertaker lost his shit on Bret Hart. This was the one. Apparently, backstage, Bret was talking about the finish to this match. He's talking about how this is going to make him look weak because of the focus is on Taker, Diesel, that match, right? He's the champ. He's supposed to be fighting Michaels at Mania, and he's kind of an afterthought. And this is the one where Taker gets up and he says, for fuck's sakes, Brett, it's not always about you know, like this kind of thing. And like Taker would never say anything, right? Like, but it just finally he just snapped. And so, you know, I guess Brett was kind of feeling himself at this point. But again, I always default back to Brett also has an amazing mind for the business. And I get where he's coming from that, it does make him look weak, but they needed something to build up this Diesel Undertaker match because there's no title involved. It's just two guys that are battling because they've screwed each other on the title. So they needed something to put some oomph into that feud. And that's what you got there. So I get it. I get where it's coming from. And I guess for me, I can see where he's coming from. Yeah. Okay. He's kind of an afterthought. Now Sean's the big deal and going into Mania. So, but nowadays you would say, well, they can always get that steam going again with a few episodes of Raw and stuff like that, right?
No, I agree with you. And if look, the three of them felt the way we feel right now, right? So it just it goes to show that maybe they could have done it a little bit differently to protect all involved. But if in the end this is what you got, I mean, it's not like Brett went into WrestleMania as a weak champion, so. He was still Bret Hart at that time. No. It's just this particular finish. Yeah. Like to Taker's point, like I just said that and I forgot that story. And I do remember him saying that. So, but I didn't think it wasn't about Bret. It just wasn't. And for him to be the champ and not get a clean win, I can see his ire for that. That's that makes sense. So.
And I mean, any Bret Hart match, Bret's going to come out looking strong anyways, because he's just so good. He's so good. Like he did a, I guess it'd be like, it's supposed to be an elbow drop, but it's like a forearm drop off the top of the cage, and it was seamless. I mean, there wasn't like a paper thin amount of air between that move and him hitting it on Diesel. Everything is just so smooth. It's just ridiculous. So to me, I love watching because it's just watching an artist at work in that ring.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, maybe I'll come on Wrestling with the 80s and we'll watch that Bret Hart Macho Man match.
Oh, great match. Great match.
I don't remember seeing it. Yeah. So I'd love to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. That one sticks in my mind because it's one of the early Saturday Night main events that I remember watching. And it was, it was unique because Macho takes off the boot and he's wrestling in a sock foot and stuff like that. It's just great, great stuff. I mean, it's Bret Hart. I mean, it's going to be good. And it's too bad we never got a true Macho Bret Hart feud because that would have been great. Yeah. All right. So that wraps up that. So comparing Super Brawl 6 to In Your House 6, what are your thoughts?
You know, it's In Your House 6 was awesome. I mean, it was just a really fun show. It did lack cohesion when it comes to like, what are we watching? But story for story, match for match, they were all really fucking good. Where in WCW, the through line was Dungeon of Doom, is Luger a heel? They told you that story. The matches were ass, man. They were so bad. So it is weird to juxtapose them and kind of go, what was better? I'll take In Your House 6 all day. Because even at what was missing, it was still a really good show. It was still a really good show. And everything that they fed you in Super Bowl 6, like they fed you Sting and Luger, so that was done okay. But all that Dungeon of Doom stuff was so bad. So bad. So yeah, I would say In Your House 6 probably like a B+, you know, maybe A-, like just because match quality was so good. Super Brawl 6 was like a fucking, I don't know, F-. It was bad. It was bad. But it was fun, man. It was fun to watch both just so I get a chance to talk to you. And if the opportunity comes about, I'd love to do this again if you would have.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure, man. And I appreciate you. I mean, this is, it's split into two episodes, but this is 3 hours straight of wrestling talk. And I mean, you're a trooper for doing this. So I do appreciate it. I know you're probably feeling it right now, ready to tap out. But I will say this show, it felt like I really enjoyed the show too. I got to say, especially considering what was going on in 95, this is a breath of fresh air. It felt like a couple of bows got wrapped up. So the whole Razor 1-2-3 kid stuff. So now Razor's ready to move on. The whole Sean and Owen. Sean's ready to move on. And then you also got your interest peak for like Taker and Diesel. So it did the job on that stuff. So overall, I'd say it's a very watchable show is what I'll give it. You know, I don't even have to give it a rating, but I'd say go back and watch. Just one you can pull from a point in time and just watch and enjoy the show versus Super Brawl. I wouldn't waste my time on that stuff. But all right. Yeah, so one more time, let's hear where people can find you, Bishop. I know you're getting tired of seeing this.
all good, man. No, I'll promote my stuff all day. Look, the first time I went on, when I went on someone else's show, he was like, "No, man, promote yourself. Like, say stuff." Yeah. And then I went on another show, and every time I would say like on my show or I talk about, I would drop the plug. So there was one show I said it maybe 20 times. I don't mind saying it. you guys just might not want to listen because nothing new's come out for a while, but I will come out soon. We're looking at, again, end of September, beginning of October time. We'll see how it all lays out. I make no promises, but what I can promise that if you go to twtakespodcast.com, you will find all platforms. If you go to @twtakespodcast on Twitter, I will tell you whether or not your take is terrible or not. So other than that, man, it's been a blast, BC. Long time coming. I believe it started out as you wanting to come on my show to discuss terrible wrestling takes, but I was glad to come on your show and discuss terrible wrestling takes. So thank you so much.
Well, and I do appreciate, and you would definitely be a return guest at some point on this show. I will make sure I make up with a great pay-per-view for you to watch because you suffered through. So I'll make sure it's a good one. Maybe like WrestleMania 14 or something. I don't know. Something good, right? You know,
I'll take Austin, 13. I'll take 13. I'll take 13. I'll Austin take 14. Brett. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
You already did Brett, WrestleMania 9, right? That's one of my favorites. But
yeah. that's a great one. All right, man. Well, I appreciate everything. And, you know, the offer is back to you. If you ever need a guest on TWT, I'm certainly available and, you know, always up for talking wrestling. And, you know, as far as me, again, you can find me on social media at WWTTpod or at BC Hunter WWTT on the Twitter or Instagram. On YouTube, it's Wrestling with the Truth, and also the channel for Wrestling with the 80s for talking old school stuff. And you're listening to me, so you know where to find me as far as the podcast itself. But on all your favorite podcasting apps, leave a 5-star review if you enjoy this stuff. Leave a comment. I'll make sure to read it out on the air and give your opinion as well. And other than that, I want to say thank you very much, Bishop. And we're running out of time, so we're going to let you go. And we'll see you next week. Bye.